If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Second half of the program begins right now. We're going around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people covering the stories where they are happening. We call it the two-minute drill, happy hour, get ready to get going. Why don't you get over to Twin Peaks? Great spot for you to go check out the games. All kinds of games going on these days. Stanley Cup Finals, Major League Baseball, getting ready for Major League Baseball playoffs, NBA Conference Finals. We'll be into the finals before long. And, of course, college football back in full force, almost full force. Big Ten and Pac-12 coming along later. But we've got college football games on Saturdays, NFL games on Sunday. Twin Peaks has got the best TV setup anywhere in town. And, of course, the ice-cold beer, the made-from-scratch menu, and those wonderful scenic views. Eats, drinks, scenic views, and you can even get that made-from-scratch menu to go. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com to put in your order, and the ladies will be happy to bring it out to you curbside at Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Have a little patience. They are adhering to all the protocols, so it might not be quite as easy to get in and get a seat, but Twin Peaks would love to see you. They will take care of you the way they have for many, many years right there. Great spot. Eats, drinks, scenic views in Independence and Olathe. Let's get things started on the two-minute drill. We begin in Baltimore. Glenn Clark Radio is up first. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Seren. How are you, my friend?
Doing very well, and ESPN's already acting like it's Monday, the way they just keep talking about the Ravens and Chiefs. It's a big game around here. I assume it's giant there.
I would think it's maybe even bigger here, Seren. You know, look, it is very much like the Week 3 Super Bowl around these parts. The Ravens have to prove that they can get past the Kansas City Chiefs at some point. Look, we all know, even if the Ravens will win on Monday night, that guarantees nothing come January. But it's one of two knocks against this organization, the Lamar Jackson era. They haven't won in the playoffs. They haven't beat Pat Mahomes yet. They get the opportunity to prove they can do one of those things on Monday night. I mean, it is a massive, massive game in these parts.
The Ravens were a tremendous team last year, and they appear to be even better. We know Calais Campbell. They always seem to draft well, speed at linebacker. We were talking earlier with Louis Riddick from ESPN, and he was talking about, you know, the linebacker speed that they've added, and offensively they don't seem to have missed a beat. I think Lamar Jackson looks even better as a passer, which sucks because I don't want him to be that good. But he spins it really well, and that's even scarier, I would think, for defenses out there.
It is, you know, adding the fact that Hollywood Brown is completely healthy in year two, and he's looked even better. He was outstanding in week one. It seemed like in the first game of the season, they were trying purposely to throw the ball a little bit more. I don't know if that will be the case on Monday night. I think the tone that I've gotten is they want to try to keep the ball out of Pat Mahomes' hands, and the way they ran the ball in the second half last week, they'd like to try to be able to do that. But yeah, I'm with you. Lamar has looked tremendous. He missed like one throw for the entirety of last week. It was a throw in the end zone that he just threw a little bit of the wide. He didn't have a lot of space to work with, but he's been outstanding. He's gotten even better. They haven't like surrounded him with talent, but the talent they had a year ago has gotten even better in Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown. They've added a couple of rookies that we haven't seen a ton from yet. Devin Duvernay's made a catch in both the first two games. We're expecting to see a little bit more of him as it goes along. But as long as they protect, the right side of the offensive line was a real concern. They let Lamar Jackson get sacked four times a week ago against the Texans. And I know that's J.J. Watt, but it's very un-Lamar Jackson-like to be sacked that many times. They've been struggling in replacing Marshall Yanda, who was outstanding, retired after last season. That would be one area of concern for the Ravens offensively, is they certainly were far more vulnerable up front than we remember them being in the pass protection.
It's not uncommon for guys that can really make plays with their legs to sometimes have big negative plays because they've made so many big plays. They don't want to give up on a play, and they'll scramble around, and we've had some plays that look like they're going to go to hell, and they end up being great successes.
Right.
But does he hold it a little too much? Is that one of the things that he's got to do? Deshaun Watson does it a lot. I mean, he takes a lot of big negative plays. I don't think Lamar Jackson takes near as many as he does, but he does maybe sometimes have too much confidence in those legs, doesn't he?
Yes, that is true. I guess the best way to say it is he still needs to improve in just getting rid of the ball and accepting that nothing's happening there. And I would even say that one of the four sacks last week was really just a misread on his part, and not really the fault of the offensive line. He doesn't do it a ton. It's not something you're likely to be able to exploit and make a difference in a game, but every now and then, you're absolutely right. There's a bit of that Superman in him where I can make something happen, and it's just not there, and you need to live for a fighter day. He's way better. He has certainly gotten even better, and he was always very good at avoiding the big hits and getting out of bounds when it wasn't there. He's gotten, I think, even better in that department in protecting himself that way and not exposing himself without limiting what he's capable of doing in the run game. So that's where he's even more dangerous.
Yeah. Defensively, though, they've taken a big step forward, right? I mean, Calais sure. Campbell coming in, solidifying things along that defensive line. Statistically speaking, I think they're number 3 yards, number 1 points. They were already good. How good are they now?
Well, the linebacking core is unbelievable. L.J. Fort, the guy that they pulled off the scrap heap a year ago around this time, has been just unreal. I think he's Pro Football Focus's highest graded linebacker through 2 games. And you add in Patrick Queen, who is making plays all over the field. And, I'm not ready to say let's see Patrick Queen lined up against Travis Kelce, but he's even done some pass coverage, which was their biggest area of weakness from their linebackers. He's been outstanding. The only area where maybe they were a bit vulnerable a week ago, Tavon Young, who is their young slot corner, who unfortunately is hurt again, and this is the 3rd major injury of his career. He's now out for the season, and that's going to leave them a little bit vulnerable. They put, a week ago, they put Anthony Averett out on the field, who's a cornerback out of Alabama, and every time Deshaun Watson went to the line of scrimmage, he immediately looked for where Anthony Averett was and was willing to throw the ball in that direction. And that's part because he's not that good, but it's also in part because Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey are your other options. It'll be interesting to see if they turn to Jimmy Smith a little bit more on the outside and slide Marlon Humphrey more inside on Monday night. I think they will do that. They won't come out and say that. They're saying that they trust Anthony Averett. I'd be very surprised by that going up against Pat Mahomes and those Chiefs receivers. I think we'll see a little bit more of Marlon Humphrey, but they were certainly vulnerable in that way as the game went along. It's the only area where they've looked particularly vulnerable defensively.
All right. How do you see the game playing out? Give me a prediction.
Oh, man. Saran, look, for the betting people, the Ravens with the 3.5, that doesn't seem right. I would take the Chiefs in that department because it gives you a lot of options. But how the game's going to play out, the Ravens have to win one of these at some point, so I'll say it's on Monday night. But I don't feel great about that. It's the 2 best teams in football. It should be about as thrilling as you could ever ask for in Week 3. I'll say Ravens 34-31, but I don't feel strongly about it.
Glenn Clark, Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thank you, Saran. You too, my friend.
Dave Softy Mahler, KJR, in Seattle, Washington. Softy, how are you, brother?
What is going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, and Russell Wilson, do we give him the MVP right now? Because it seems like all the mistakes that have been made for years at not even giving the man a vote, everyone's decided this is the year they're going to rectify it, and he's going to get the award. He seems to be hand-picked. Not that he doesn't deserve it. He's probably deserved it. He certainly deserved votes before now, but he's playing as well as he ever has, and he seems to have certainly the best team around him, right?
Well, it's funny because every year there's an obvious storyline for who's going to win the MVP. I think it was the last year or 2 years ago. I think last year we thought, Drew Brees is going to win the MVP, right? He's never won it. They're going to give it to him. The old man's going to get one, and then he didn't get it. So I don't know, man. I mean, Russell Wilson, as you said, is obviously right now playing the best football of his career, at least after 2 games. The guy's at 82.5%, and he's averaging 9.5 yards a throw. I mean, this is not just about dinking and dunking and bubble screens and screen patterns and wheel routes. This is about a guy that's throwing the ball downfield to guys like DK Metcalf, David Moore, and Tyler Lockett, and he's doing it at a very, very high rate. 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, and that 1 pick happened because Greg Olsen dropped the pass on Sunday night against the Patriots. So this guy has been almost perfect in 2 games so far for the Seahawks, but he's going to have to be, dude, because this defense so far has not been very good. I think it's been actually worse from a pass rush perspective than it was a year ago. So Russell Wilson, if he's going to take this team back to a Super Bowl, he might have to win the MVP.
They're throwing the ball around the yard, and with DK Metcalf playing the way he is, Tyler Lockett, throwing to the running backs, an array of tight ends that they're using. But is it going to stick, right? I got excited. I said, hey, look, it looks like Brian Schottenheimer, right, a kid who played football just a couple of miles from where I'm sitting right now in high school. It looks like he's, you know, turning the page, and he's doing what fans have always wanted, and that's let Russell Wilson throw the ball. I was reminded that they did that last year for a little bit, and then they went back to the ground and pound. Are they ready to just give him the keys and get out of the way?
Well, first of all, here's the cool thing about Shoddy, about Brian. He's calling the game from the booth now, and he's never done that. Russell Wilson, believe it or not, for the first time in his pro career, has a play caller that is upstairs in the press box. You know, everybody else, Jeremy Bates, Daryl Bevel, Brian Schottenheimer, all these guys up until this year have been on the field. So people look at that as maybe a big reason why Russell Wilson is having some success. But the other idea that you talked about there, the whole let Russ cook thing, which is amazing how this has become kind of a national phenomenon. It began on Twitter, by the way, in Seattle, and now it's a freaking national story. He actually has thrown the ball after two games in 4 years more than he has. I mean, he threw the ball 69 times in 18, 66 in 17, 78 in 2016, and 71 in 2015. So this is just the fifth most passes he's thrown after two games. So to me, it's not even about throwing the ball more. It's about when they throw the ball. It's about going maybe a little bit more up-tempo. And then it's about kind of what you said there, man, that they've got a better collection of skill players now around him than they maybe have since they had Marshawn and Golden Tate and Doug Baldwin in the highest paid offensive line in the NFL in 2013. So for me, this is more than just about letting Russell Wilson throw the ball more, for sure.
Defensively, how good are they? I know the Irvin goes on the IR. They expect the rookie Brooks to step in and play, the kid they got from Texas Tech.
Right.
Defensively, where do they compare to maybe their great defenses they have when they were going to the Super
Bowl? Well, they're not even close. I mean, that defense in 2013 was maybe the greatest defense in the history of the NFL. They took the highest scoring offense in NFL history and held them to 8 points in the Super Bowl in New York in 2018 against Peyton. So, yeah, I mean, this defense, I mean, if you want to compare this defense to something, don't compare it to the 2013 Hawks. Compare it to a college defense or a high school defense because they're terrible. I mean, they stink. Their pass rush was awful a year ago, and they've you know, really done nothing to improve it. I mean, yeah, they drafted Jordan Brooks, who can get in the backfield. They spent some draft capital on Alton Robinson and Daryl Taylor, two rookie defensive ends. But as far as going out and getting some established guys, their answers were Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa, who to me are at best, you know, B-level, maybe C-level free agents. So the pass rush was terrible a year ago. To me, it looks even worse now. They got to go out and sign somebody, whether a Clay Matthews off the street, trade for somebody if they can pull it off by the middle of October. But if this pass rush man doesn't get its act together, it doesn't matter how good that back seven is because that defense is getting killed right now by that pass rush.
And in comes Dallas with all kinds of weapons as well. They're a 4.5-point favorite, the Seahawks are, against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
How's that game play out in your mind?
You know what? If I'm a gambling man, I would stay away from the spread in this game, and I would just play the total. I just think you got two bad defenses. The Cowboys are really banged up. They got a bunch of their secondary out. Sean Lee, Leighton Vander Esch are also out for the game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, so that over 57, I would take the over 57 in the game on Sunday. That's all right. That's how I'd play this bad boy.
All right, and finally, Pac-12 is going to play again November 6th. The Pac-12 will be up and running. You know, is this a popular decision? How's it play out there out west?
Well, it's a popular decision to play again for sure, but the way the whole thing came down is not a popular decision. I mean, first of all, the fact that you're waiting 6 weeks to get this thing going, I find to be ridiculous. You know, Jimmy Lake was on our show on Monday, and he thinks they can be ready by Halloween. I think if all these coaches and players were doing what they were supposed to be doing, which is staying in the weight room, staying in shape, you know, reading the playbook, learning the playbook online, there's no reason why these guys couldn't have come together and found a way to start maybe the third week of October instead of the second weekend in November. So that bugs me. I just think the perception of the Pac-12 right now is in the toilet. It's in the gutter. It's as bad now as it's ever been. But they had no choice but to do this because the alternative would have been just suicide for the Pac-12. So at least they're playing, but they have a long way to go to get that perception back, man.
Yeah, does a 7-0 Pac-12 team crack the playoffs? That's
I don't think so. No, do you?
No, I don't, unless there's two other teams that, you know, have one loss and you know, rise up and make that schedule look good. I don't know how you're going to be able to make that schedule really stand up and hold up to get them in there. No, I agree with you. It's no time for the Mariners. Sorry, Softy. I know you wanted to talk a lot about the M's.
Well, that's your loss, pal. Really your loss. Trust me. I had some great – hey, how about this? I'll leave you with one thing. The Mariners just assured themselves of the longest playoff drought in team history. It was 19 between 77 and 95, and now it's going to be 20 going into next year. So for as bad as I thought it was when I was a kid growing up watching Mariner baseball, it's now worse for our kids. They've done it again, Soren. They've done it to another generation of Mariner fans.
That's too bad. I feel for them. Softy in Seattle, great stuff as always, buddy. We really appreciate it. Stay healthy, stay safe, and have a great weekend.
Yeah, I can feel the sympathy in your voice. Take care, man. Be good.
Ryan Green, 1010XL in Jacksonville, Florida. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Soren, I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Doing well. When the Jags got down 14-0 last night, I see you tweet out, "Well, this season was fun." Come on now, these cardiac Jags. I know they didn't come back, in last night's game, but you know they've been better already, I think, than most people nationally thought they were going to be. What's the view there in Jacksonville?
The view in Jacksonville is complete and total disappointment. Soren, you got to understand something, man. They're 37-77 under general manager Dave Caldwell's tenure. 40 games under 500 since the beginning of the 2013 season. When this season started, we thought it was going to be a horrible year. The tank for Trevor talk was all the national talk about the Jaguars. Then all of a sudden, they go out and they beat Phillip Rivers and the Indianapolis Colts. And then on Sunday, they go to Nashville and play the Tennessee Titans to a 33-30 game that was decided with under 2 minutes to go. So we're sitting here thinking, wait a minute, they're young, they're inexperienced, but my goodness, maybe they might have something here. And they go on national TV, their only national TV exposure last night, and get boat raced at home by an 0-2 Miami Dolphin football team. And they made Ryan Fitzpatrick look like a combination of Joe Montana and Barry Sanders in the process. It was an embarrassing night of football for the Jacksonville Jaguars last night. And there were a lot of fans and media alike that were pretty disgusted by it.
All right, tell me, what is the view then of Gardner Minshew? I mean, you mentioned, suck for Lawrence campaign, but Minshew's his own phenomenon. Like, what do they think they have in Gardner Minshew?
I mean, Soren, you've had me on long enough, man. You know I'm a Gardner Minshew guy. Gardner's thrown 6 touchdowns already this year. Now, Gardner was 30 of 42 last night for 275 yards. A lot of that was garbage yards, though, because the game was already was never in doubt. Here's the problem. The Jaguar defense is so bad. They've gone down 7-0 in all 3 games this year. They've gotten the ball last in all 3 games, meaning their opponents have gotten the ball first and driven it down and scored. So the Jaguars' offense has never taken the field this season without being down 7-0. Last night, they were down 14-0. The Jaguars had run 4 offensive plays, and the Dolphins had a 14-0 lead. I mean, that's not a recipe for success, because once you're down 14-0, you almost throw the offensive game plan out the window a little bit. The defense can begin to pin their ears back, come after the quarterback a little bit more. So I think Gardner and the offense struggled last night because of the absolute ineptitude of the Jaguar defense. By and large, Gardner's had 3 decent games to this point. Certainly the verdict is still out on him, but if they don't get better play, Soren, from their defense, it's not going to matter what Gardner Minshew does, because their defense has been absolutely horrid through 3 weeks of the season.
So what's the future for Doug Marrone?
It's not a good one right now. I mean, look, they have a couple winnable games coming up. They go to Cincinnati a week from Sunday. They go to Houston, and then they have Detroit here in Jacksonville. Those are the next 3. Then they have a bye week. Soren, after the bye week, you're talking about at Green Bay, at Minnesota, at Baltimore, Tennessee again, Indianapolis again on the road. I mean, the second half of the Jaguar schedule is absolutely brutal. So if they don't, you know, get to the bye at a minimum 3-3, then you could be potentially staring, you know, a 3-13, a 4-12 type situation in the face. And if that happens, I think Doug Marrone would be in trouble. I don't think general manager Dave Caldwell will be in trouble, because at this point, I don't know if he would ever lose his job. He's kept it being 40 games under 500 since 2013. So I think at this point, he's just going to be here forever. But as far as the head coach goes, I think Doug Marrone could potentially be in some trouble.
Yeah, and listen, if you fire him, just give him a bus ticket back to Syracuse, because I'll take him at my alma mater. He was very good there.
And Soren, in fairness, I like Doug, and you're exactly right. Doug was a good college coach. I think Doug's been dealt somewhat of a unfair shake here, because the roster is so ridiculously young, but he might be the scapegoat in all this year.
Yeah, there gets to be a time when your fans, you know, say, you know, get rid of him. And you say, well, if not him, then who? And they say anyone. Then at that point, you got to make a move. I'm with you. I think he's kind of had a couple of spots where, listen, if you don't have a Pro Bowl quarterback, it's tough to be a coach that gets multiple contracts in a spot. So, look, I feel for Jag fans for sure in this scenario. But let's turn to college football real quick. Florida. Are they really a top five team? I think they're a sleeper team to win the national championship. I like their odds. You know, there's no value in betting Alabama or Clemson. I thought Florida, there was some real value there. Can they possibly run the table on their schedule this year?
I don't know about running the table, but I think clearly, you know, their schedule is favorable enough to where even if they lose a game, they would still be in contention. What I like about college football teams this year, Soren, is if you have a returning head coach, a returning offensive coordinator, and a returning starting quarterback, because the offseason has been so crazy, been so wacky with coronavirus, obviously, and the Gators have all that. Dan Mullen is the head coach and the play caller. Brian Johnson, the quarterback coach, and, of course, Kyle Trask, starting quarterback, are all back for the University of Florida. This is a Gator team that has had back-to-back 10-win seasons under Dan Mullen. It's a Gator team that has a lot of talent on offense, including what I think is the best tight end in the country, and tight end Kyle Pitts. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And if their defense, now their defense has to replace some good players, like a Jabari Zuniga, who's now with the New York Jets, like a John Grenard, who's now with the Houston Texans. But if their defense can replace those guys, and I think they can, then I think absolutely you're correct, and the Gators will be in the conversation as one of the teams potentially in line for that college football playoff.
All right, in Georgia, you mentioned the quarterback spot. They thought they had not their returning quarterback, but a very good quarterback that was going to be playing for them, coming over from Wake Forest. What do we expect from Georgia at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Jamie Newman opted out. JT Daniels, I don't believe, has been cleared yet to play, so it might be a true freshman situation tomorrow when they go to Arkansas. DeJuan Mathis potentially. The quarterback situation at Georgia is certainly one to follow. Here's the thing, though, about the Dogs, Soren. Their defense may be the best defense, not only in the SEC. They may have the best defense in the country. They are stacked on the front seven, at D-line and linebacker. They also have a good secondary. So Georgia's going to win games with their defense this year. I think that Florida-Georgia game here in Jacksonville on November 7th will obviously be for the SEC East. I'm not breaking any news there. But that is a fascinating dynamic, because as good as Dan Mullen has been, he's lost to Georgia in back-to-back years. If he were to lose to Georgia 3 years in a row, that is going to ruffle some fans, ruffle the feathers of some fans in Gainesville. I think Florida has more talent than the Dogs, but defense can solve a lot. And I think Georgia defensively may be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That Georgia-Florida game is going to be one of the biggest of the year in college football with the abbreviated season. That game is giant. Georgia laying 28 at Arkansas. Florida is laying 14 at Ole Miss. Great to have college football back, that's for sure. Ryan Green in Jacksonville, Florida. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Soren, you too, my friend. Take care.
Adam Teicher brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. Get over there this weekend. Everything you need. We got a beautiful weekend. You need some patio furniture. They got the best around. I bought my patio furniture there in 2004. It is still absolutely fantastic. Go see them. You need stuff for the man cave, right? The weather will be turning soon, whether it's a shuffleboard table, poker table, pool table, maybe some theater chairs for binge watching your shows when it's cold and we're all stuck inside. Family Leisure, if it involves family and it involves fun, Family Leisure has you covered. K10 and Ridgeview, make sure you mention 810. you'll save even more. Locally owned and operated for 25 years, Dennis and his great staff will take care of you the way they've been taking care of me and my family. I will caution you, though, be careful. You'll want to walk out with about half the store anytime you walk in there. I know I do. I've actually got a list on my notes on my phone of the things that I want to buy next from Family Leisure. Go check them out. Great folks, great locally owned and operated company. It's Family Leisure at K10 and Ridgeview. It's Adam Teicher on our T-Mobile guest line. Teicher, how are you, buddy?
Good, Sven. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I want to get to the bottom of why you're peppering everybody about what they tell Patrick Mahomes when he takes off running. What are you getting at, Adam? What is this scab you're picking at every time I'm on the Zoom with you?
Oh, it was a big deal. Obviously his running, was a big factor in why they won last week. And, sure. They're 5-0 when Mahomes leads the Chiefs in rushing, which isn't a whole lot better than their record when he doesn't lead them in rushing. So, it's one of those deals. But just kind of continuing his evolution. I mean, he's not been afraid to take off before, but, just so effective with it the other day. I mean, 5 times he ran on third down, 4 times he converted for first downs, once on that big 3rd and 20 that not only converted but got him into field goal range. So another part of, his game. I mean, there's so many ways he can beat you, and he's, really developing this part of his game for sure.
5-0, man. I hadn't realized that. That's a great statistic, and I think there's some validity in it, right? Sometimes it's like, okay, is that just a coincidence, or is there some teeth to it? But I think it speaks to when he's running like that. Number one, if he's leading him in rushing, it means they're throwing the ball. And if you ask the PFF guys, they'll tell you that you should throw on every down almost, right? The runs are just to keep the defenses honest. The passing is how you go about winning the game. So it means that he's throwing the ball, which means big plays, big chunk plays. But it also, to me, means he gets really if they're not respecting his run, he's taking big chunks like he did on the 3rd and 20 in the game against the Chargers, and conversely, when they do start to respect the run, then that opens up the passing games. I think it's important, and Andy Reid used to do this with Alex Smith, right? He'd run an option play, he'd run a straight draw play. It's important for them to show that Patrick Mahomes run to take a guy out of coverage, I think. I think that's once they got to that in the second half, that's what really opened things up for him.
Yeah, and Andy Reid brought up a good point that he's always kind of, or usually over his head coaching career, had a quarterback who was, that was mobile and could do that kind of thing and could beat you that way. I agree that, it is a dilemma, and Mahomes kind of addressed this. He said, we know he's always kind of looking down the field when he's on the run to make a play, and that's kind of what he did. I mean, that throw on the touchdown to Tyreek Hill, I mean, he was on the run then and was looking to throw there and made it happen. So it's kind of a dilemma for the defense. What do you do? Do you peel off in coverage and go to him, leaving guys open? I mean, it is a dilemma, and he's always so good at seeing the field that I do feel like it is a big part of what the Chiefs have going, what he has going.
Yeah, the Chargers, I think part of the problem too, and maybe why they didn't get to it in the first half, is they weren't converting first downs. They weren't moving the chains. And so it gets hard for Andy Reid to get real deep into that play sheet if you're not getting first downs.
Yep. And, the more you do that, the more you can get into the playbook. So, no doubt. They finally got that rhythm after he started converting some of those first down, those runs he was attempting.
The Chargers were a good team a couple of years ago at 11-5, right? But for the most part, they've just kind of been Charger-esque. Why do they end up dragging the Chiefs into a rock fight all the time when they play them? What is it that they do that seems to bring the Chiefs down to their level?
I disagree. I mean, I think particularly on defense, that's a pretty good team. I mean, that's a talented roster, and 5-11, they underachieved last year, but I think that's a playoff team this year. I think they're going to do some pretty good things. Let's see how they resolve the quarterback situation, and whether they go back to Tyrod Taylor, which they say they're going to do. I mean, I feel like not having Phillip Rivers is going to be a real bonus for them. you know, if they do go back to Taylor, I mean, the two things we know about him, he's not going to turn it over, and he can avoid the rush and make a play that way. So, you know, those are two things Phillip Rivers couldn't do. I mean, he's always turning it over. He's still doing that with the Colts, and he can't really avoid a pass rush. So I kind of have my eye on the Chargers. I still think, obviously, the Chiefs are going to win the division, but I still think this is the team that's going to emerge as the biggest threat to the, you know, the closest competitor. It's the team that's going to make the Chiefs sweat the most.
You don't think it's the Raiders?
No, I don't. I mean, you know, let's see. Where I am with the Raiders, let's see them do that against New England this week. They're going out to New England. Can they, you know, make it happen again like they did against New Orleans? If they can, then it's time to take them seriously. But right now, I'm still feeling the Chargers as the Chiefs' most serious competitor in the division.
Well, if they don't do it, I'm talking about the Raiders, if they don't do it against the Pats, you don't eliminate them, do you?
No. But I think it's time to take them seriously if they do win that game. Now, if they don't, let's see what happens. And, you know, they've got, you know, they're coming to Arrowhead in a couple weeks. So, no, I'm not eliminating them by any stretch. But, you know, I want to see them do it. You know, it's one thing to do it one week at home. You open in a stadium, that's great. Now, let's see. Now, if you're for real, you'll do it again against another playoff contending team. So, we'll see what they got. To me, this will give us a lot better read on what the Raiders have going.
We know Andy Reid doesn't want to give anything away, right? He definitely, and he'll even bristle if you get too much into a game plan type of thing. And I get that, and he's not going to say anything negative about an opponent. He's not going to say anything negative about his own team. But, like, you know, I asked today, I was kind of surprised, I asked Dave Tobe, like, hey, how do you go about finding, they obviously were high on Harrison Butker, and I screwed up and said he didn't get drafted. He went in the seventh round to Carolina, and then they put him on the taxi squad, and the Chiefs poached him off the taxi squad. But, you know, if they'd have known how good he is now, somebody would have probably used a second or third round pick on him, you know. Those guys all end up kind of sucking. It seems like the good ones always do, either not get drafted or go really late in the draft, and the ones that everyone goes, oh, this guy can't miss, they end up bombing out for whatever reason. But I said, you know, how do you scout it? You know, and he just said, like, oh, we love the kid. We thought he had a draftable grade. And I'm like, well, you know, what? That's a secret? Like, you know, what to look for in a kicker? Is that really that big a secret? I was kind of surprised that he just offered nothing. Just said, oh, we really liked Butker. I mean, that to me doesn't seem like a matter of national security.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was the same deal when they signed Tommy Townsend this year. You know, they didn't draft him, but they really liked him and felt like he was, you know, he was a draftable player also. And, you know, with regard to Butker, I mean, hey, you know, the Chiefs did a nice job in plucking him off Carolina's practice squad. Even as a rookie, remember, he missed his first kick. Hit a game winner in that same game. You remember in that Monday night game against Washington, and made like that was like his first or second of whatever it was, 18 or 19 straight. So he, you know, he's done a nice job since the day he walked in the door. But I think if you ask the Chiefs when they took him, then hey, did you really see him developing into this kind of player? Just money on the shorter kicks, and now this reliable guy from long distance. They would have spent a draft pick on him back then. You know, they would have. Any team would have, like you say. I mean, if teams know what he was going to develop into, that they would have spent a pretty good draft pick on him. So I feel like he's gone beyond now what the Chiefs even they hoped when they got him 3-4 years ago now.
And it makes the Chiefs so tough now, because now they get anywhere even around, you know, just past midfield, and they're willing to bring him out there and let him fire away. I mean, that's you know, we've seen two games. The Texan game was very impressive. The Charger game, like I said, if the Chargers are the team you say they are, then that was impressive. Get a win anyway against a playoff caliber team on the road, and that's a heck of a win. I'm not quite as sold on the Chargers as you are, but we'll see how it plays out. They're definitely a very good defensive team. But in the first two games, the Chiefs have shown that they can run it, maybe not all the time because they weren't as effective against the Chargers, but they were playing from down as well, and that probably took some of the play calls off the sheet for Reed having to call the game while trailing. But they've shown that they can run it and grind you down and win the time of possession game. They did that against the Texans. And then now they've shown that their kicker is maybe the best, or at least he's the equal to Justin Tucker, and can beat you from distance. I mean, it just sucks to be a defensive coordinator and see the Chiefs coming, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a heck of a weapon, you know, when you're as potent as the Chiefs are offensively, and you got a quarterback as resourceful as Pat Mahomes, and there's so many receiving threats and running threats, and then all of a sudden now you've got this guy, you know, this guy is the kicker, the meaning Butker. It's a real problem for teams, and, I wouldn't like to be the guy responsible for putting together a defensive game plan. I feel like it's a tough job. The Chargers, credit to the Chargers, did a nice job of it. They've kind of been that way against the Chiefs now recently, but we'll see what Baltimore can do this week now.
Yeah. The Chiefs, you know, I think Steve Spagnuolo is underrated nationally, but I think he's even underrated around here because everyone's, you know, when guys go down, nobody ever calls after a loss or a tough game and goes, well, I know this guy and this guy were out and this guy left during the game, but, you know, what the hell are they doing? They can't tackle, right? It's just like the tackling sucks. And I think that's been a problem around the league, and I think we can all figure that one out pretty easily. But the coverage part of the equation, you know, Rashad Fenton, when targeted, is the quarterbacks have a perfect passer rating. Antonio Hamilton and Daniel Sorensen are giving up better than 100, like 118 passer rating. 149 is what Ben Neiman has given up. Now, Austin Ekeler can make just about anybody look that way, any linebacker that has to try to cover him look that way. So I think those numbers will get better for all those guys. We've seen more. We've seen more from Fenton. We've seen more from Ben Neiman. But the fact that, you know, those numbers are that bad on a number of guys, and the Chiefs are the ninth best scoring defense in the NFL after 2 weeks, means there's something really going really, really right schematically. I know nationally nobody has given the love to the fact that no Pinnell, no Colin Sanders, no Alex Okafor, no Breland, no Ward in this last game, Hamilton going down in this last game, Juan Thornhill coming back quickly from an ACL injury. Both Wilson and Hitchin went down in the game. That's a hell of a performance. I know it's a rookie quarterback, but he was pretty hot, and that was a hell of a performance with all the manpower there down on that side of the ball.
Well, I was waiting for him to make more plays than they did. You know, I was waiting. And this was the rookie's first. It was just Justin Herbert's first game. You know, not even the preseason. And I was waiting for him to make a play. And, you know, hey, you could say Snead did. I mean, credit to him. And ball's coming his way. He made a nice play. And, you know, but hey, with a veteran quarterback, you probably don't get that thrown. You know, so I was waiting for that. But regarding the Chiefs defensively, you're right. I mean, things don't add up. You know, you talk about the stats that you were talking about, how a lot of their guys are just have been bad in coverage. And then you think about, well, they're not really defending the run very well. They've been allowing better than 4.5 yards a carry. How is this team the ninth best scoring defense in the league? I mean, that's a pretty good accomplishment when you're not really getting a whole lot done statistically otherwise. It's not like they're taking the ball away a whole lot, right? I mean, they've got the two interceptions by Snead, and that's it, unless there's something I can't think of right now. So it doesn't add up. I'm trying to figure out where the Chiefs are defensively right now, because it seems like it's just a hard group to figure out. In the end, they're getting the job done, but how? I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, it is. It's because, and I'll say something else. That I forgot that Frank Clark went down in the game, right? Left because of illness as well. And that's, you know, he and Chris Jones are and Tyrann Mathieu are the only three guys that they're really paying Like the rest of Alex Okafor makes a, you know, probably an average check for a defensive lineman. You know, but the rest of the guys, you know, Bashaud Breeland, a couple million, right? Was all that. Charvarius Ward was kind of like my trash for your trash in a trade 2 years ago. I mean, these are not guys that are highly, you know, were big investments, were big ticket investments, yet he's playing. Anthony Hitchens was. They paid a lot of money for Anthony Hitchens, I should point that out. Yep. But you know, he's done it with that personnel. It's I mean, I think Spagnuolo is one of the best kept secrets around how he's done, because we know Andy Reid. It's not like Andy Reid's, you know, it's not Bill Belichick, like, oh yeah, you know, the game plan's really coming. We know Andy Reid's over on the offense and then managing the club overall. The defense is all Spagnuolo. I think he deserves more credit than he's getting, because I think the results are much more than the parts he's working with.
Here is, I think, an underrated factor in what's going on with the Chiefs so far this year. Through two games, they're getting pretty good play from three defensive rookies. One, a fourth-round pick, Legarius Sneed. One, a fifth-round pick, Mike Dana. And one undrafted, Tershawn Wharton. Of all years, you figured your undrafted guys, your low-round picks, are not going to be productive at least early in the season. Those three guys are doing a pretty good job for the Chiefs this year. I saw something one of my colleagues, Jeremy Fowler, at ESPN.com, did a story that was pretty interesting. Through the first two games of the year, he was talking about the top 20 newcomers to teams this year and how they played. And when I say newcomers, I'm not just talking about rookies. I'm talking about veterans in their first year with a team, whether a trade or free agent or a rookie. And he had both Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Legarius Sneed in his top 20 of newcomers. Not again, not just rookies, but just guys in their first years with any teams. But he also had a list of six or eight honorable mention guys, and he had Mike Dana in that list of six or eight. So the Chiefs had the top three of the top 26 or 28 newcomers of the season. That's huge for a team that is shelled out a lot of money on extensions for guys like Mahomes and Kelsey and Chris Jones, and is in desperate need of getting good play out of guys not making a whole lot of money, guys making the minimum. And that's what's going on, at least through two games, with Sneed, Wharton, and Mike Dana. So, you know, that's another underrated factor for the Chiefs, I think, right now.
No, I agree. We've said if they're going to go, you know, Stars and Jags, you know, the Jags got to play better than Jags, right? You know, they may be paid like Jags, but they got to play better, and that is happening. And Brett Veach, again, we said they have to hit in the draft if they're going to take this approach, and they really have. There's no doubt about it. Adam Teicher, our guest here, his new book is called Kingdom, How Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs Returned to Super Bowl Glory. Get it wherever you buy your books. I'm making my way through it. It's very good. Adam, by the way, congratulations again on that book. We appreciate the time, buddy. Enjoy your weekend, and enjoy the game on Monday, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man. Talk to you then.
All right, Adam Teicher, veteran scribe, in fact, president of the Pro Football Writers Association here in Kansas City. You can read his work at ESPN.com. We will take a break. We'll check in with Todd Lebo next here in the program.